This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC Acra Hudson Catskill.
WGXC is always looking for new programmers to volunteer at your community radio station. Email info@wgxc.org if you have all sorts of terrific music you want to share with your friends and neighbors, or if you want to join in the greater community conversation on the radio at 90.7 FM. Programmers learn how to do their own radio show and podcast, and how to make audio adventures interesting for listeners. You can call the WGXC Hudson studio at 518-697-7400 or email info@wgxc.org if you're interested in hosting a program or working with others on or off the air on WGXC.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Mid-Hudson News reports that landlords in Ulster County who keep rental units affordable can now be able to access funds to upgrade energy efficiency and building electrification and accessibility in their buildings. Under the program, small landlords with 8 or fewer units can receive up to $15,000 per rental unit and no more than $30,000 per building if their rentals serve households at the 80% to 61% area median income rent level. Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger said, and I quote, "The new incentive-based program will help small landlords make investments that improve safety and comfort and reduce tenants' utility bills while committing them to keeping rents affordable for the next 5 to 7 years," end quote. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that Representative Pat Ryan believes that Americans should be able to watch sports for free and on October 31st demanded an investigation by federal officials into sports blackouts. Ryan sent a letter to the United States Comptroller General and the commissioners saying that team owners have exclusive control of their private business and who airs games, and they sell the rights to a patchwork of network and streaming services, and I quote, "leaving fans with no option but to pay thousands of dollars to watch their favorite teams on streaming services like Apple TV Plus, Amazon Prime Video, and ESPN Plus. Because of these monopolistic practices and blackouts, fans still can't do the one thing they want, watch their favorite teams play ball," end quote. Monday was a rare day when all 4 major professional sport leagues all played games, and Ryan seems miffed that they were not all on free television. Ryan says he has regulatory oversight over sports teams because of the Sports Broadcasting Act of 1961, where Congress granted sports leagues an antitrust exemption for their broadcasting agreements. This year, Mets and Yankees games were blacked out 25 times each because their league sold exclusive rights to the games to streaming services such as Prime Video, Apple TV Plus, and Peacock. Ryan said, and I quote, "Fans who wanted to watch every Mets game this season had to fork over more than $1,400 to a variety of streaming services to avoid blackouts," end quote. Ryan wants the Government Accountability Office to investigate. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Heather Bellow reports in the Berkshire Eagle that 2 of the Triplex Cinemas screens in Great Barrington will reopen on November 17. The other 2 screens should open by Christmas, according to the group that bought the theater 4 months ago. The Save the Triplex nonprofit group bought the Triplex Cinema from Richard Stanley 4 months ago, closing the cinema for renovations. The group is trying to raise $1.7 million this year for renovations. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. And That wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Trucks at Harvard University driving around with faces and names of students who had signed on to pro-Palestinian statements. Corporations saying things like, give us the names of students who have spoken out and we won't hire them.
Corey Saylor with the Council on American Islamic Relations says common anti-Muslim tropes are showing up again. CARE says President Joe Biden's questioning of Palestinian casualty numbers and law enforcement's warnings about possible Islamic terrorist attacks echo stereotypes of violent and dishonest Arabs. The group says a ceasefire would cool anti-Jewish and anti-Muslim tensions here. The White House is developing a first national strategy on Islamophobia, as polls show Biden's support among Arab Americans has plummeted. In response to heckling from a rabbi calling for a ceasefire, Biden Wednesday restated his support for the two-state solution and a humanitarian pause. A House plan for Israeli aid is hitting resistance. Without funds for Ukraine, it's a non-starter in the Senate, and Biden has promised to veto it. House Speaker Mike Johnson tells Fox News any Israel aid must stand alone, and he's calling for cuts to the IRS to pay for it.
I think if you put this to the American people and they weigh the two needs, I think they're going to say standing with Israel and protecting the innocent over there is in our national interest and is a more immediate need than IRS agents.
The Congressional Budget Office reports those cuts could cost billions in lost tax revenue, adding $25 billion to the deficit over a decade. Republican Congressman Ken Buck of Colorado says he won't seek re-election. Buck tells MSNBC he's disappointed in his party's continued election denialism and support for January 6th rioters.
If we're going to solve difficult problems, we've got to deal with some very unpleasant truths or lies and make sure that we project to the public what the truth is.
Buck was one of just two House Freedom Caucus members who voted to certify Biden's 2020 win. Republican House Appropriations Chair Kay Granger of Texas also just announced she won't run again. Former President Donald Trump is asking a Michigan court to stop a lawsuit that would block him from the ballot. Suits in three states point to the Civil War era 14th Amendment as barring insurrectionists from office. Trump says Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson lacks the authority to enforce the amendment, but Benson says that's up to the Supreme Court.
There's a lot of evidence in the public record and in several indictments to suggest interference with the effort to overturn the will of the people.
Public school teachers and staff in Portland, Oregon are on strike for the first time in the city's history. They say students are struggling with large class sizes and limited mental health resources. Angela Bonilla with the Portland Association of Teachers also cites low pay.
It does not help retain quality educators and diverse educators when they can't afford to live in the city.
The district's new teacher-based salary starts at $50,000, lending many to quit in the first 5 years. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We're back in Wisconsin, where three democracy lawsuits may have an impact on the state's election administration, access to absentee ballots, and gerrymandered voting districts. A Dane County court ruled October 27th that a vote by the Wisconsin State Senate to remove the director of the Wisconsin Elections Commission had, quote, no effect. A previous ruling by the state Supreme Court allows state officials to remain in place if there is no successor. Megan Wolf had been scapegoated by 2020 election deniers for implementing pandemic absentee voting accommodations for nursing home patients. Wolf remains in her position. Another suit involving the Wisconsin Elections Commission will be heard November 10th, challenging the use of the state's online voter portal to request absentee ballots. The conspiracy theory group pushing the suit argues that the state law requires absentee ballot applications to be submitted directly to local election officials. The state's portal receives the application first, then notifies local election officials who download it and review it. Then November 21st, the first of two cases claiming the state's heavily gerrymandered voting districts violate the state constitution will be heard in the Wisconsin Supreme Court. The April election of Justice Janet Prusiewicz shifted power in the court, which could lead to the drawing of fairer maps and possibly impact the balance of the U.S. House of Representatives. We have more on all these cases at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, November 2nd. Local early morning temperatures range from 23 degrees in Tannersville and Steventown to 26 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 50 degrees. Actual snowfall was measured yesterday, 2.8 inches in Canaan, New York in eastern Columbia County, and 2.5 inches in Canaan, Connecticut. A freezing morning becomes a chilly afternoon. We hit 50 degrees at 4 p.m. Overnight, we'll be freezing again, hitting 29 degrees. Tomorrow, conditions will be chilly. Even though temperatures hit 54 degrees at 3 p.m., that warming effect is brought down by strengthening winds. Be sure to layer up, people. 40 degrees overnight takes us into a little less windy of a Saturday, high of 57. Sunday, still cool, winds kick up again and we get a high of 58 degrees. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 1:14 a.m., high tide at 7:05 a.m., low tide again at 1:06 p.m., and high tide once again at 7:14 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 53 degrees and the tide strength is average. Sunset today will be at 5:36 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:26 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 5%. Plasma winds will be average at 421 kilometers per second with a thin density of 2 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. Get those overnight contacts in now. The sun seems to be waking up from its nap. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 105. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
I am now joined by the folks from the Chosen Family Zine, Mike Amari, a local event organizer for Opus 40, Basilica Hudson and others, and Liam Singer, owner of the Avalon Lounge in Catskill and also a member of Wavefarm's board of directors, are here in the Wavefarm studio to tell us what's going on in November locally.
What's going on?
In November.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the main thing is that we're now at that point where the outdoor venues in the area have shut down.
Yeah, this is a significantly shorter...
So it gets smaller, but it also gets, like, weirder.
Yeah, yeah.
And new places sort of begin to emerge.
New places pop up, and definitely a lot more local acts are, you know, coming out of the woodworks. There's some very good stuff going down in November. But yeah, like you said, it's, we're getting into the hunker down months.
I mean, I just sort of recently found out about some places that opened probably about a year ago, but in Newburgh, this place called Toasted that does parties. And then in the show paper, in the zine here that we've just put out for this month, there's like Jet Set Tiki Bar in Newburgh. And, I had an interesting show that they were doing, with a band called The Stride, I think it was, from the city. And then there's a band coming down from Albany, and there's a 45s DJ. So it's got this kind of like retro, you know, tiki bar kind of vibe in there, but like psych garage rock, you know.
Nice.
So I feel like that's probably worth checking out.
Yeah. I mean, Newburgh in general, I've still never like just gone and hung out there for a night. I got to do that.
Yeah. One of the other like more unique things this month is that Catskill Amateur Film Competition,
yes,
Tales from the Catskills, that's at Tinker Street Cinema.
Yeah, and they have an adults night and then a kids day as well. So that's that is awesome.
And then also at Tinker Street, they have another really interesting night, which is this documentary called Snowmobiles from 1973, which is apparently literally just about snowmobiles. I feel like that's a front for something, and like I feel like there's something else going on in this movie.
I think snowmobiles peaked in 1973.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, the documentation is there,
followed by a full live acoustic set by the Black Lips.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. And they're
famous
playing,
for their snowmobile set.
Right. Like match made in heaven. And the Black Lips are playing at Tubby's too, but that show is sold out. So
yeah.
If you didn't get tickets to that,
you can only see the Black Lips with snowmobiles.
You have to sit through the snowmobile film. Yeah. Yeah.
And we were looking through and picking a few out. The Bobby Lees at Colony, they're playing two shows in the middle of the month. And, Mike, you said you heard it might be their last show.
Yeah, rumor. I mean, this is like a local band that has worked really hard for the last, I don't know, 5-6 years and really taken off. And I think that they're not really locally based anymore so much. So I think, you know, I don't know if this is like their last show in the area for a while or if they're going on a hiatus in general. But I just, I heard something about that.
It's the last something.
Yeah. It's always the last something.
Yeah, so true.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I had also down near Newburgh and Beacon, there were some interesting events. This place called Happy Valley, that's like a arcade bar situation. They do sort of like theme nights and stuff, and they're doing something called Mean Girls Cabaret, which is like a show, like a dance performance show thing and a party and a thing. So you know, I feel like, you know, for the right crowd, if you're in the right headspace, that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great movie.
They're gonna do 2 hours of Jingle Bell Rock.
We'll see.
And it's just gonna get worse and worse every time.
Yeah. At Avalon, probably our biggest live show of the month is Lydia Lunch is playing with her band Retrovirus, and she's announced it's one of her last two gigs playing this stuff.
And the band is kind of insane, right?
Yeah, yeah. Weasel Walter's in there, and I can't remember who else off the top of my head, but yeah, it's an incredible band. One of the last chances to see her do her sort of no wave stuff. So that's a big one. And then other than that, some cool local artists. Stone Fruit, who's a local ambient artist, actually, he's playing an album release show with Zapato. They were going to be at Foreland, but it got moved to Avalon. So that's on the 9th now. And then Rager, aka Rebecca Borer from Hudson, is doing an album release show on the 15th at Avalon, which is
that record is awesome. I think there's one track up on you know, the streamers.
Yes,
that's really good. Yes. And you know, I mean, the show, like, her original music is great and everyone should check that out. But if you miss that, they're also DJing at a screening of Hackers at Hudson Hall, which is a really, if you've been to Hudson Hall, it's kind of regal in there.
I guess the theme of this month is really strange movie screenings with like some kind of live accompaniment, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And actually, Upstate Films at the Saugerties location, the Orpheum Theater, they're in the middle of like a music doc series. So we have a few things listed in the show paper, which, if you don't get your hands on the physical zine this weekend, we also posted all of this to our Instagram, which is at Chosen Family Presents. But they have a bunch of great docs on an array of different things. But then they also are screening the Buchan Gase doc, which was shot in Hudson at Basilica over the pandemic. And Aaron from Buchan Gase is going to do a live performance with that as well. So,
yes.
I mean, I feel like it's the time of year to start, you know, sitting in
dark rooms.
Dark heated
quiet
room.
Yeah. Dance party wise, Jonathan Toobin's returning to Half Moon. Nice. And that's always a blast. He does like, you know, classic soul dance parties. And Avalon's doing back to back the weekend after Thanksgiving, Primal Disco and Community Rave Network, which are two really fun parties. And then, I guess you mentioned some dance parties happening down south. I think that's.
Yeah. And, what was the weird show at Colony this month?
Oh, Cool Keith.
This month's
out of place Colony show.
Well, the irony, like, Cool Keith played there when they first reopened, and it kind of made sense with like what they were doing, but they've sort of gone in this like more, you know, sort of down the middle
direction.
So Cool Keith now feels like crazy to play there, you know.
I can report from last month's Out of Place Colony show that there was a small mosh pit at Lightning Bolt.
Yeah.
Nice.
Did you have to like sign a waiver to get into it or?
No, it was.
You'll have to check out the.
I heard they wouldn't allow they wanted to charge them like $200-$300 to drop glitter in the club, or maybe Glockabell wanted to.
Glockabell played Avalon, she did throw a lot of glitter, and she did ask me in advance, and I did say it was okay, and it was fairly difficult to clean glitter.
Glitter,
so
man.
You know,
yeah.
Colony might be ahead of the game on that.
There's also, I wanted to mention the local Insaugerties. They've got a handful of shows this month. I think maybe the most interesting coming up this weekend is Emel or Emel. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but Tunisian singer. Don't know anything about them, but like the little bit I heard sounded awesome.
Yeah, totally cool.
And they also have a band called Trocair from, are they from Mexico?
Yeah.
I think. Yeah, it's like psych jazz. That sounded pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a really small room. It's like, you know, an old church chapel. So I think like if you're into the show, it's a really great place to be. It's not somewhere that I would just like
drop in, right.
You know, on a random night. So,
Then Park Theater too has a couple of cool, kind of world music shows, Habina, and man, there was another one. I got to find it. Interesting flautist playing. I don't know. Y'all can use the internet.
Yeah. Park Theater, Hudson, check it out. I feel like some of these like smaller indoor spaces are kind of ramping up.
Totally.
The Half Moon. Seems like in Hudson is ramping up, Park Theater.
Mm-hmm, totally.
Tubby's has a full slate as always. Mm-hmm. I would say sort of, you know, two of the best shows this month are there and are already sold out, which is the Black Lips and Mary Lattimore.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they've got tons of great stuff. I mean, I think Tubby's is the type of place that you can kind of drop in on a show and it will probably be interesting.
Yeah, totally. Their curation is pretty awesome.
They have a show at the end of the month. It's actually the way it worked out is that one night they have June McDoom, who's this great sort of like pastoral indie, like some of her record has like acoustic guitar and strings. It's really beautiful. And then the next night is Disco Doom. So it's June McDoom and then Disco Doom back to back nights.
Nice.
Disco Doom's from Switzerland. They're also playing with a local band called Marlboro, who are from Marlboro. Kind of doing like a Wilco thing there, where it's like Marlboro the band.
And then this guy Mike Emery is on the bill as well. Mike Emery.
That's interesting.
Weird.
Weird.
Also at Avalon, I want to mention Wayne Horvitz, out jazz legend, playing toward the end of the month. And John Mueller, very cool experimental artist toward the beginning. What else we got here?
Did we mention Joe McPhee with strings?
Oh, no, we didn't. That's a big one.
That's at Howland.
Howland Cultural Center.
Oh, yeah. That's actually at the
or Canine Hackett.
Oh, right. Yeah, Canine Hackett Arts in Poughkeepsie, I believe.
That's going to be just a crazy cool show.
Yeah.
Joe McPhee is
local legend. And then, yeah, I mean, that's like all in the show paper that's in the Chosen Family zine. But the zine also has like local art and photography and stuff in it. And there's a really great interview, which you could probably speak to with Elliot, who regularly runs door and stuff on the dance parties and stuff at Avalon. But it's just like a really like has an incredible story.
Yeah, it's sweet, and I was totally taken by surprise that the interview happened, but Sarah Van Buren, who organizes community rave network parties, among many other things, lives in Hudson, interviewed Elliot, who, as you mentioned, often works the door for our dance parties, and Elliot's just had, like, a really wild life that involves being heavily in the techno and house scenes in New York at a certain time, and then, you know, moving to Amsterdam and producing all these amazing events.
And he, like, still does stuff over there.
Yeah. Which is wild. And he's now also works for the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition, so does...
It is the Elliot I was thinking of. I was assuming that was the Elliot Mattis.
So there's a great interview with him in the zine that when Sarah sent it to me, it was longer than what we can usually fit, and so... I said, I'm probably going to have to cut this down. But when I read it, it was like, what do I even cut from this? This is just fascinating. And it is very succinct. It's not like he's, you know, going off on tangents or anything. It's just
big life.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's fun to learn about, you know, people in your community and your neighbors. And
you don't always know their backstories.
Yeah, exactly. Like, really fascinating. And then, yeah, there's a bunch of great stuff in the zine. Most of them are out now. The rest will be out by this weekend. Mm-hmm. So, again, if you go to the website, chosenfamilypresents.com, or the Instagram, we put all the locations up on there. So.
And this is the last physical copy. We're taking a winter break. We'll keep doing the show paper on the Instagram.
So if you have an event, you can also send it in.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And the deadline will even be a little later in the month since we aren't doing a physical one. But, yeah, we'll, fingers crossed, have it in us to bring it back in the spring.
Yeah.
We'll see how many – I guess next month we'll see how many New Year's Eve events there are locally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar. It's like with – we just had the Halloween events, and then there's, like, you know, the weekend of Thanksgiving is always a lot of events going on. But it's like, you know, that kind of stuff I feel like – you don't need as much guidance. You're probably going to go to your favorite place or, you know.
You're going to go where your friends are going.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is turn people on to stuff that is maybe outside of their friend circle or their town, like if you live in.
Or maybe on a Tuesday night when they're not thinking about going out.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, maybe you can't catch the show then, but then that artist a few months later is playing down the street from you and you, you know, go check it out, so. Yeah,
yeah. You think back to your New Year's Eves and how many bands can you remember that you actually saw or you know, paid attention to or could hear over the din of whatever.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's amateur night. You guys know.
I was sort of going to say that, but it can still be a really fun night too. It's just
nothing against it at all. But it you know, it's just
I'm an amateur myself.
Less, yeah, there's less to sort of dive into.
And we didn't mention Gravesend, Graveside.
Graveside in Woodstock.
Jason Webley, who I don't really personally know, but I could sort of tell from reading about, was I think has kind of a cult following. Is playing there,
and I saw that they added a sort of karaoke thing there,
they do like live piano karaoke, right?
On the November 12th and 19th, it's called Party Around a Piano.
Yeah,
I saw that.
That's very intriguing.
Yeah, piano bar style karaoke is a lot of fun because you know the player can work with you while you sing and stuff.
Yeah, so there's a lot of great stuff going on this month.
Oh yeah,
support your local venue.
And now I'm joined by Florence Oli from Community Action of Greene County to talk about the local hunger issue. Welcome to the WGXC afternoon show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Introduce our listeners to what Community Action of Greene County is.
Sure. So Community Action is actually a national network of organizations that came out of President Johnson's War on Poverty. Community Action of Greene County has been here since 1968. Our program areas are varied. Each agency is very different depending on the needs of that community. But at our agency, we offered victim services in both Greene and Columbia counties. That includes domestic violence residences and non-residential services, aftercare services. We have a weatherization assistance program for Greene County. We do a lot of work, several grants right now. We have the deal with housing and homelessness, which is a critical issue in Greene and Columbia counties. And then we offer a food pantry, a mobile food pantry, a farm to food pantry program. And we actually have a brand new grant to help with that through Ag and Markets that will allow us to purchase meats and dairy products from local farmers and distribute it through the pantries in Greene County.
Wow, that's great. When does that start?
The grant started April 1st. We got a contract last month, and we have the advance in hand, so we're going to be starting that very, very soon.
Well, that's great news.
Yeah.
So how big is the hunger problem locally?
It's an issue. It became an issue. Well, it was an issue before COVID. During COVID, as most people have heard, people were given additional SNAP benefits, food stamps. School-aged children, there was an extra allocation for families, and that all went away several months ago. So we all know that the price of housing increased dramatically since COVID. It's a totally different
price of
about
everything.
Price of
but
everything.
Housing in particular.
Housing, food costs, gasoline, heating, all of that. So families are really struggling right now. We receive, it used to be referred to as FEMA dollars, but Emergency Food and Shelter National Board monies, which is federal dollars that come into the communities to deal with food. And we administer those dollars for both Greene and Columbia County and distribute it to pantries, not just our own pantry. And through talking with other pantries, everyone's experiencing the same thing. You just can't keep food on the shelves. We'll spend $5,000 at the regional food bank, where we get a lot of bang for our buck. Very, very cost effective to shop at the food bank. And within a week, our shelves are empty again. We are very fortunate in our agency that we get a lot of donations from local farmers. We also have the Feeding America program through the food bank. That's a national program that works with retailers, food that would otherwise end up in landfills that's close to code or discontinued items. We actually have a team of volunteers from the ARC of the Mid-Hudson Valley that go to Walmart three times a week and bring us food for our pantry. And that is what allows us to have some of the choices that we have in our pantry, a lot of meats and fish, a lot of snacks sometimes for kids, puddings and dairy products.
So we'll get back to this too, but people locally can help you guys out and give you food or can
Absolutely.
Volunteer. Tell people if somebody wants to help the local hunger problem, how can they help, I guess, with Community Action of Greene County?
Well, we have several organizations that have food drives for us annually. When Bill Williams was with Clear Channel Radio, and I believe they've changed their name, but they have a food drive, a Stuff the Bus event every year. Catskill Rotary did this year on Knights of Columbus, just I think 2 weeks ago, had a food drive for us. They stand at the road outside of Walmart and collect food items and cash for the pantry. We have different businesses, Girl Scout troops that will do food drives, you know, non-perishables, items, canned goods, and then bring that into the pantry.
So people can individually donate, but it's really better if you like have a group that you're already working with to band together and get a lot more food.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, it's hard. It's great food. We would never turn away food. But as I mentioned, we can get a lot more for a dollar through the regional food bank than we can at any of the local retailers. So cash donations are also
always
very
the
helpful.
Best. Yeah,
yeah, and most pantries definitely accept that. We do have a link on our website if anybody wanted to make a donation towards a food pantry.
And what about volunteering? Do you need people to help too?
Yeah, we have a volunteer coordinator who does a phenomenal job. We have several volunteers. So Stone Ledge Farms has a CSA in South Caro. They have great CSA, and they donate to us every week. We have a gentleman that comes down from the mountain and picks up the donation to us and brings it to our food pantry. We have another woman locally that lives in East Durham. She spends Wednesdays in our food pantry organizing and cleaning and rotating to make sure everything's in code. We have a married couple that go out and they do our mobile food pantry for us and different food pickups for us. So, yeah, volunteers are always, always welcome.
And then on the flip side, if you need help, who do you contact with your organization?
We have the food pantry in our office, and only because we are so short-staffed right now and limited with our resources, we are actually just started this week sticking to our hours. Our food pantry is open Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays from 1:30 to 3:30. It might be 1 to 3:30. But it's food. And if somebody comes into Catskill and they don't have food, we're always going to give them a package. However, we're being more diligent, directing them to other pantries in the community that might be open different days, just so we can make sure we have a staff member available. Because so often now we find ourselves, we're pulling administrative staff or people are waiting for a very long time. But we also started during COVID a mobile food pantry. So every Thursday, we have vans that go out all throughout the county, down the mountain, the valley towns. And then every other Wednesday, we have vans that go up the mountain.
Are they delivering?
They're delivering food packages
to specific addresses, or are they setting up just randomly?
No, we tried that. We tried different models in the beginning, and we found that door to door, and we know who to pack for. So people have to call on the Wednesday for the Thursday delivery, and for the mountaintop deliveries, they call the day before and register, and then we bring food to
them.
You
want to give out that number?
Sure. It's 518-943-9205.
And the website, too, I guess, if people didn't get the number quick enough. What is the website?
It's cagcny.org, Community Action, GreenCountyNewYork.org. Or just Google us, and we come right up.
Over the years, how does this time compared? How does the need compare to other times?
It keeps going up. I mean, I've been at the agency a while now, 22 years, and ARRA back in 2008, 2009, the financial situation.
That was the last time it got this bad.
Well, before ARRA, I remember these numbers. We were serving like 35 families a month, and then it went up to like 70-something during that time. And now we're at 170, 180 unduplicated families a month. We also have a program the last few years through the People's Place in Kingston. We have a volunteer coordinator go down, and she collects food through different Hudson Valley farmers, and we put out a free farm stand every Tuesday, and we serve over 100 people a day when we do that. The produce, I mean, it's such a gift, what these farmers donate, truly, and people really appreciate that.
It seems like farmers are more invested these days in programs like this, or have they always been?
It seems to be more, and I just think people are more aware. I mean, we have means, we have jobs, we have secure housing, and we're all struggling right now. So if you can just put yourself in the shoes of somebody that doesn't have what we have, and maybe they're working a minimum wage job, or they're paying, you know, twice as much for rent as I do for my mortgage, you know, people are really in a tough spot right now. They're so limited. Where the housing is usually, that's affordable, is outside of the towns where the jobs are. We have a public transportation system, but it's really not there yet where people can depend on it for a job.
It's really only for shopping, right? Mostly.
They're working on it. They're working on it, but you can't depend on it for employment at this point. You just can't. So it's tough. And I think the farmers, too, are aware, and they give back, and it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful.
Is there anything else you guys need donation-wise? I mean, just food or food-related things?
Food-related things and hygiene products. You know, people come in, they need feminine hygiene products. People ask for toilet paper. People ask for toothbrushes and toothpaste, razors. So we try to stock those items as well. We do receive some funding through the Dyson Foundation for those types of items. But that's always a request. Laundry soap, those are luxuries for people that are struggling. So
yeah. What other does this Operation Unite have other things going on you want to talk about, new programs or
We have coming up for the last, I want to say 7 or 8 years, I should have looked exactly how many, we have worked with the Elks Lodge, Catskill Elks Lodge number 1341, and they're great partners, and we prepare a Thanksgiving dinner. In the beginning, we did some sit-down, but most of the requests were for delivery. You know, we have people in the motels, they have really limited, they have a microwave maybe and a small refrigerator. There's no way they can prepare a Thanksgiving dinner. We had people, you know, eating alone. They're not going to make a big dinner. So we delivered pre-COVID 100, 150 dinners. During at the same time, the Department for Aging, which is the Department of Human Services, was doing a dinner, a sit-down dinner for their seniors in Athens. This year, we are combining efforts, which is exciting. So we're using the Elks Lodge again. It's a beautiful facility, big open dining room, great parking, handicap accessible. And we'll have volunteers from our agency, the Elks, Aging, and the general public preparing the Thanksgiving dinner. We'll serve a sit-down dinner, and we'll also have delivery throughout the county as well. And when we deliver everywhere, from the village of Catskill to Caro to Prattsville, Tannersville on the other side of the mountain.
It's a big county, and takes long, winding roads to get to some of those places.
Yeah, but we have so many volunteers. It's wonderful. It really is. The hardest part is getting the route sheets together when we figure out how many volunteers we have. But it really works well, and we've got a great routine down. During COVID, the seniors did not have their Thanksgiving dinner the 1 year, and we served 300 meals and delivered them out of the Elks. That was the largest number, and that's kind of what we're bracing for this year. Registration seems a little bit slow, but often people wait before registering for that. But if anybody wants to volunteer, again, 943-9205, ask for Dell. She's our volunteer coordinator, or go on our website, and there's our application on there as well.
It does seem, is it true, does it seem like the different organizations are sort of helping to cover the whole problem? You were talking about you're open on Mondays and Thursdays and Fridays, and some other places are open on Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Yeah, we try to work together and coordinate as best we can. We also realize, and this is where we've always been very lenient, most of the food pantries are volunteer-driven. So they're very limited by their hours and when they're staffed. Where we're in the office, we're there Monday through Friday, you know, all day. So it can be difficult. It can be really restrictive to access the pantry in your community if you have a job, if you have kids in school, if you have limited transportation and you're relying on somebody else. So that's where we kind of try to fill in those gaps.
It seems like there are more food pantries and free fridges than there were years ago.
Absolutely.
I mean, there weren't any free fridges locally years ago. Yeah. I don't remember. And now there's one right there in Catskill next to the bridge, and there's one in Hudson.
Yeah, which is great. Absolutely. And again, the need is there. And I think there's one up in Tannersville as well. It was one of the first ones.
And they're constantly showing pictures online of it being empty, so people are using it. So that helps cover, I guess, those hours when you guys are closed.
Sure. Absolutely.
Is there anything else you want to mention or that people need to know about this issue?
Just remember when, you know, it's difficult for people, and it's, you know, sometimes there's a lot of judgment, and I think sometimes there's a lot of misinformation about people that live in poverty, people that are food insecure or experiencing housing issues, but it's just very difficult right now to live in our communities with the rate of pay is for many of the positions available compared to what the cost of living is in our community.
Right. And the cost of living, specifically the cost of housing, just went up kind of remarkably in the last few years and has made all of these problems much worse.
Sure. So I mentioned we do a lot with housing and homelessness, and a lot of our grants allow us to pay up to fair market rent, which is a rate set by HUD, Housing and Urban Development. And that's, you know, a federal agency setting these rates, but our rates in Greene County are higher than 85% of the fair market rents. So we have money that we're really not utilizing as we could to help people because there are no apartments near fair market rent. And that's an issue. And that's something that has to be changed on the federal level. So we do the best we can, but the resources are really limited in our communities.
Yes. So again, if people want to help a Community Action of Greene County, tell us the website and the phone number again.
Sure. The phone number is 518-943-9205, and the website is cagcny.org. And if I have one more minute, we also have our holiday program coming up. Here Comes Christmas, Adopt a Family. Letters are going out to the people that have donated in the past. We serve a few hundred children every year.
Is that food or is that gifts for?
That's gifts. Those are gifts for kids. And we serve right up until the age of 18 if they're in school, because sometimes I think it's more important for the older kids to have that kind of hope and, you know, positivity around the holidays.
So you're looking for gift donations for all ages?
Or
cash again is probably the best.
Cash again, unless we have families register. If you want to adopt a family, we can give you the number of children, the age of the children, the gender of the children, and some of their interest, and you can actually shop for that family. And those, we usually have most of the kids adopted, and those that are not adopted, we give them gift cards so that the parents can buy them toys.
And
gifts.
You can just imagine how thrilled those kids are to wake up with things to open on Christmas morning.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you, Florence Oley, for all the work you've been doing in this community for a long time to help people that need help in this community. And anything that we can do to help you guys come. You're welcome back anytime on the radio.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
On Monday, October 30th, several New York State Senate committees held an eight-hour-long hearing to get feedback on problems with the slow rollout of the adult recreational cannabis market, which has produced about one-tenth of the revenue expected, creating major financial problems for small operators. Many senators raised concern about the lax enforcement in cracking down on unlicensed pot stores, especially in New York City and large urban areas. Farmers, growers, and various marijuana business concerns discussed their issues with the extremely slow rollout, with only about 30 legal adult stores approved so far, and the negative impact on many farmers and businesses. They also highlighted problems with the marijuana potency tax, far higher than on other businesses, and which witnesses said promote the use of unlicensed marijuana sellers. Last month, the state opened licensing to big businesses from outside the state, as well as existing medical marijuana companies. That change sparked an outcry from social equity applicants. Witnesses also complained about the never-ending red tape, often new. We hear from four individuals on a very long hearing. Alan Gandelman, president of the Cannabis Association of New York. Renee St. Jacks of the New York State Farm Bureau. Miranda Bromley of Hudson Valley Herbals. And Joseph Calderon of the Cannabis Farm Association.
As I sit here today, I wear many hats in New York cannabis. I'm an organic vegetable farmer, an AUCC cultivator, a processor. I am a member of the state's Cannabis Advisory Board, and I'm also the founder and the current board president of the Cannabis Association of New York. We need to adjust the cannabis potency tax. We need to fix our marketing and advertising regulations and laws. And make them friendlier so that smaller businesses can market in advertising while allowing positive consumer education. And we also need to address license size and vertical allowances for some of the largest operators in the state. In terms of TAC, one thing you didn't hear today is that at the current potency tax rate for flower, that tax equals to about $1 million per acre that a farmer grows, and each farmer is allowed to grow up to 1 acre. That is more money in tax than the farm actually sells in cannabis. In terms of marketing, there's a lot of restrictions on businesses that they can't educate consumers about their products. And so customers are really just going online and shopping for potency and price. And so that is very contrary to the goals of the MRTA, and it's very contrary to all of the public health things that we've been talking about. The marketing regulations, the way they are, they're really preventing dispensaries from marketing and advertising in their own neighborhoods. So especially the ones that are surrounded by illicit shops. They cannot get to their customers. And we have to look at how we allocate canopy. There's enough current supply for years to come. And so at the same time, we're allowing a small group of large companies to enter the market with 10 times the canopy that the next size license has available to them. So this is just going to create more of a supply problem. We must continue to find ways to provide support and relief to all the small farms and the businesses who took the risk over the last 18 months and struggle every day. The state needs to create a fund for cultivators and for card dispensaries to continue and help them operate. And we need to pass the Cannabis as an Agricultural Crop bill. And I think, you know, a lot of these solutions can be done, and they can be done pretty quickly.
I'm Renee St. Jacques. I'm with New York Farm Bureau, and we represent farmers across New York, but also the farmers who are growing adult-use cannabis or interested in growing adult-use cannabis and entering this market. I'll just bring up a few things that hopefully the Senate can do to help us out here in the next session and solve some of these issues. Alan mentioned the potency tax issue. Senate Bill 4831, Senator Cooney, thank you for sponsoring that. That bill would solve that issue. The New York Farm Bureau supports that bill. It would implement a more reasonable tax collection method. Alan also mentioned the cannabis is an agricultural crop. It needs to be defined as that, and right now there's a lot of gray area. And when it comes to agricultural assessment, farmers already have to meet certain criteria to receive that assessment. Growing cannabis should not be an issue. It should not be a barrier to them receiving that benefit. And as we've heard with all the issues of financial issues that farmers are facing trying to get into this market and make it work and have a viable business, this agricultural assessment is just one way that we can help solve that. So another one, the exemption for cannabis when it comes to sales and use tax. A lot of the farm operations across the state rely on a sales tax and use tax exemption for certain goods and for certain services. Adding cannabis to that, and that's another bill, Senator Cooney, you're sponsoring, so thank you so much. And lastly, Alan also mentioned the concern over the vertical integration of the registered organizations. New York Farm Bureau shares that concern and how we're going to make sure that farmers are not pushed out of this market as what's happened in other states where these large organizations, these large businesses come in and take it over. So
my name is Miranda Bromberg, and I'm here to speak on behalf of my farm, Hudson Valley Herbals, located in Ellenville, New York. We are a women-owned and operated business and a C applicant. Today I speak for fellow C applicants who are new to the market but who anticipated applying in this current window for cultivation licenses. For years, we planned and waited for the application window, and last month, we were shocked when additional guidance from the board was released on September 29th. This licensing application FAQ contained critical guidance which informed us for the first time that mixed light, outdoor, or combination license types would be disallowed in the October 4th application window except for microbusinesses. This unexpected information contradicted what was communicated to us by the office throughout this arduous process. I resigned from my prior career in 2021 to focus full-time on this business and invested significant personal capital into it. These past few years, we have all patiently waited out lawsuits, attended virtual board meetings, applied for educational initiatives, critically read every control board and OCM publication, sent in public comments, and have been writing, researching, and collaborating with industry counterparts to create a winning business plan. Until September 29th, the guidance provided by the OCM stated that applications would be scored on a number of factors, including social equity, community involvement, environmental and energy plan, economics of the applicant's municipality, and other factors. It also seemed to allow applicants to apply for the full range of cultivation and tier type. Like many, we spent over a year building our business plan and application materials, as well as conceptualizing our physical site, relying on the OCM's guidance. The current portal, however, provides no option to upload additional materials to bolster our application, so these details won't be seen by the board. We are ready to continue investing significant capital and energy into our beloved town. We want to hire employees, purchase our property, reassure investors, and budget our business, all of which is difficult to do without a reliable process and a realistic timeline from the state. I counted on the head start the OCM promised C applicants, just like me. However, these changes make that reality seem less likely. The farm site we have optioned in our historically agricultural community sits just down the road from the future site of Cresco Labs' New York mega facility. We have done everything right by the standards set in the legislation and regulations, and even so, Cresco will be able to operate and establish itself before we will. We were told sustainability, community impact, and social equity would be a focus of the state, and yet a fully indoor, multi-state corporate operator will be able to operate far in advance of us. How is this in line with the stated values of the control board and OCM? While we appreciate the efforts put into the newest guidance, the degree of changes required significantly more time for applicants to adjust than was afforded. Like thousands of others, we are frustrated with how long it has taken to roll out the legal market for cultivators, processors, dispensaries, and consumers. We want the process expedited. I hear the struggle and frustrations of the conditional license holders, and I am glad the state has taken action to support those farmers. But there are many current and would-be farmers, especially women, who never got the chance to grow hemp and who are being left behind now. Those in our position have been told once again to wait and see.
There are many hardworking and experienced applicants who have not had the opportunity to present their plans to the board.
I'm Joseph Calderon, Vice President and Co-Founder of Cannabis Farmers Alliance and CEO of Grateful Valley Farm, AUCC number 34, and Farm Bureau member. Thank you for recognizing and acknowledging the CFA as the voice of over a third of all AUCCs. We have submitted evidence and exhibits, including personal testimonies depicting the heartbreaking state of our members. On behalf of the CFA, I'm here today with a plea for your immediate intervention to rescue our distressed farmers, address the needs of our growers, particularly with their livelihoods and their lives at stake. Also, maybe revisiting the original Cannabis Rescue Act. We thought there were some pretty good ideas in that as well. New York promised to put independent businesses at the heart of the legal cannabis industry. Now MSOs are rolling out millions of square feet of indoor growing capacity while small independent farms are being crushed by onerous regulations and a failed retail rollout. And that promoted social and economic equity, which is actually kind of impressive. With the resilience of 36,000 illegal businesses, the consequence of the current program is a parallel market eroding the ability for small legal operators to survive.
This was Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Next, let's hear some 2022 new music from WGXC's own programmer, Matthew O'Neill. His 2022 album is called Songs of Connection, and the Phoenicia-based singer's first song on the album is called Higher Calling. Here it is.
High calling, high call. Bless the water in the aquifer. Bless the water in the it up, purified, white eagle, tropical tree, flying in from New Key. Bless the south, bless the north, bless the east, bless the west, bless the plants, and the medicine chest. The sky is blue, the water's pure, bless the brothers. We ain't met yet. Bless the mothers giving birth, calling on the moon for support, nestled in the arms of the earth. Always giving collaborative soul, right there facing the destroyers, all the ones who think of themselves before everyone else missed out on the sending. Life is a Freudian advertisement. And Sino and Sinita, like an open door. Saga Josephina.
Bless the pure burning chest.